Every Tectonic listener is well aware I am a big believer that AI is a game changer for how professionals in the technology industry will do their jobs. TSI Research is not immune to that reality. I am proud to say that we have been aggressively experimenting on how AI can change the way we create research and deliver those research insights to our members. And now we are ready to release TSIA Intelligence, the first Gen AI model designed exclusively for technology services. Unlike generic Gen AI tools, TSIA Intelligence taps into our real-world, industry-validated data that is not in the public domain. We have designed this model to give you clear, actionable, and board-ready insights. Right now, in technology services, the stakes are really high. Every decision counts. Good decisions can build your career. Bad ones can end it. General LLMs are incredibly powerful, but you need specialized insights built on industry data that you can trust. That is TSI Intelligence. To check it out, visit tsia.com/intelligence. One of the main reasons we founded TSIA almost 20 years ago was to establish accurate operational benchmarks for technology service businesses that just didn't exist anywhere. Benchmarking is a killer tool to quickly understand your strengths and weaknesses. Benchmarking sets you on a journey that starts with where you are, points to what is possible, and identifies the business practices that will get you there. That's why I am super excited we decided to offer a free version of TSI's industry-leading benchmarks with Performance Optimizer. Performance Optimizer is an easy-to-use benchmarking tool you can access from the TSI website. You can assess operational strengths and weaknesses in multiple areas, like customer success, professional services, support services, etc. And the Optimizer results prescribe specific actions to address specific challenges and opportunities. This is an amazing offer, and I am so proud we are doing this for all of our loyal Tectonic listeners who may not be corporate TSIA members. To check it out, visit tsia.com/free.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Tectonic. It's producer Vanessa again, here to set the stage for today's episode. Just last week at TSIA's Interact conference in Orlando, Thomas Law delivered a powerful keynote, and today you get a front row seat. In this session, Thomas takes us through how companies can stop talking about customer value and start delivering it in real, measurable ways. It's bold, it's insightful, and it's exactly what leaders in tech and services need to hear right now. Let's dive in.
So I'm in this little cube outside this really big conference room at a pretty large tech company. And I'm getting ready to get tapped to go in and speak to the board of directors. And I do a lot of public speaking, and I don't really get nervous about speaking, fortunately. But board meetings are tricky. Board meetings are tricky for two reasons. Number one, the agenda is like packed. There's all these thoughts that the CEO wants to get in front of the board. And number two, every agenda item on the for the board has an agenda behind it, if you know what I mean. There's a reason the CEO wants to get that topic in front of the board. So I was asked to talk about as a service transformation. And I was getting coaching from the service executive at this company. And they said, well, look, Thomas, the board needs to understand, you know, what this journey looks like. What's the financial impact of as a service transformation? What does it do with our partners, our customer engagement model? They're gonna want to hear about companies that have made it through. They're gonna want to understand best practices, and landmines to avoid. And maybe three, maybe four slides, 15 minutes, 5 minutes Q&A. Go. Like I said, tricky, right? So I get the tap to go in. You walk in the room, this big oval table. There's all the board behind them, all the people supporting the board, packed room. And you don't do introductions because they figure, you know, the CEO is not going to put an idiot in front of them. So I just launch and I start talking about as a service transformation. And about, I don't know, 7 minutes into it, I see the CEO lean over to one of the board members and whisper something. And the board member's like picking their head up and down. And then I get done. I take Q&A. The board members asked some really good questions, so I think they were listening. Next day, I talked to the service executive, and I said, "How'd it go?" And they said, "It was great. You stuck the landing. We've got some new funding and resourcing to push this as a service transformation forward. We are super committed." Great. 1 month later, they missed their quarterly number. And I talked to the service executive, and they say, he says, "You know, basically, we're going to kind of pause this as a service stuff until we make sure we hit this next quarter." Okay. 3 months go by. They missed that quarter. 2 months after that, they get a new CEO. The new CEO comes in. Most people in this room can guess what that CEO said. "We're a product company. We got to stay close to our knitting. This whole as a service thing is just, you know, that's not us." So basically, 6 months after I presented to the board of directors, this company had made zero progress on as a service transformation. Now, why do I tell you that story? Because it illustrates one of the greatest forces that is impacting your business model right now, the way you operate. And you know what that is? It's inertia. It's inertia. You know, Newton's first law of motion. If you have an object sitting here, it ain't going anywhere unless a force comes along and pushes it. And the bigger the boulder, the bigger the company, the bigger force you need. Now, we have been on this stage for several years now, basically arguing that our technology business models are creaking and groaning. And we like to talk about things like, you know, we have stovepipes. I like to talk about the bucket brigade, right? That we have this model that's been in place for 50 years where you have smart product people, they come up with a product idea, they throw it over, you know, to marketing. Marketing makes up some shit about the product. They throw it over to sales. Sales makes up their own shit about the product. They sell something and they throw it to services and say, "Here you go," right? And it's that last handoff between sales and services, right? The poor service people were sitting there going, what did you sell the customer? What are we doing here?" Right? You can relate to this, right? And we can laugh because we know it's freaking true. But I'm going to give you a little quiz, right? And just you're just going to answer in your head, but I want you to answer honestly about the state of your business model. It's 7 questions. First one, are your offers simple or complex? Your corporate data, especially about your customers, right? Is that converged, easy to get to, or stovepipe? Cross-functional processes like that handoff from sales to services, right? Seamless or not so much? How about the business value of your solution? Is that crystal clear, no-brainer ROI, or is there some assembly required there? Sales right now, are they being incented to cram as much technology into a customer, whether they can consume it or not? So when you come up for the renewal, you got a bunch of stuff that wasn't deployed. Is that happening right now in your company? Current pricing model, how are you feeling about that? Especially for your user-based pricing. And last, how about overall revenue growth of your legacy offers? I don't care if you're selling CRM, PSA, ERP, XYZ, ABC. I don't care what you sell. And if you've been selling it for a while, are you a little concerned about the growth? Well, at TSIA, we talked to lots of technology companies, and I can tell you what the answer is in the back of the book for most companies right now. Offers are too complex. We are still too stovepiped. Our processes are disjointed, right? Our value propositions are not crystal clear. We have salespeople just jamming technology into a customer. Everyone is nervous about pricing. Do I need to move to consumption, usage, value, outcome? I got to take a look at that. And revenue is under pressure. So I want to talk about what's creating all this pain, this uncomfortable state that we're in. And there, from our perspective, four big forces that you need to understand that are really pushing on this inertia issue, this belief that we don't have to change. What are those forces? At a high level, there's the great workflow migration. There's the shrinking revenue cross. There is this premium on value realization. And last but not least, there is this pivot to model-driven revenue engines. So let's talk about these four. We're going to start with the great workflow migration. So AI has been out there now for a couple of years. When it first came out, it was not clear how companies like your companies were going to basically adopt this technology. How are we going to take advantage of it? How are we, you know, going to invest in this and not impact profitability, right? Well, the pattern's pretty clear now. I call it the AI two-step. The first step is you take people out. Before you have any advantages from AI, that's why you're seeing all these layoffs. It could be 4%, 5%, 12% of a workforce. Why? I need money to invest in AI. And I'm hoping, this right, the strategy in all these boardrooms is that when we're done, we're going to have an operating model that is more efficient and more effective. That's the game plan. It's very clear. And today, right now, there are four ways you can get work done at your company. You could do it the old-fashioned way and have, you know, one of your employees work with some software. You know, I'm a sales rep. I'm putting in my opportunity here, capturing all the major stakeholders, right? That's the old way. Number two, you can have employees being augmented by AI, tools like GenAI, GenAI creating education materials, GenAI capturing customer sentiment from a call. Third way you can get work done is with a digital agent. Don't have to have an employee involved, right? A support agent, a sales agent. And then last but not least, complete automation. AI is now doing things that you don't even have to touch. Maybe creating your revenue forecast. And this is the great workflow migration from left to right. We're going from AI light companies, maybe AI is involved with, you know, 20% of our workflows, and we're trying to figure out what is our posture going to be? How much of this can I get into agents? How much of this can I fully automate? That's the game right there. And you're all in the middle of it. And it is going to fundamentally change our operating models and what our companies look like. And I'm going to give you some benchmarks to think about, well, gosh, how far are we on this journey? And there's a lot of AI maturity models out there, but this is a different lens. Here's numbers. Think about numbers, right? So what percentage of your revenue is being invested on technology versus labor? It's going to be more in technology. What percentage of your workflows are being influenced by AI? If that's less than 20%, you're still AI light. What percentage of your business decisions are data model driven? What do I mean by that? Setting pricing, doing revenue forecasting, prioritizing features, prioritizing what customers to work on today. That is all going to be model data driven. And then last but not least, how many independent business processes do you have? These stovepipes, we all have sales processes, we have service processes, we have marketing processes. AI is going to help rationalize that. You're going to see fewer processes. So these are the markers that you can look at. The first force putting pressure on the way you operate. The second force is this shrinking revenue cross. What the heck is that? So there's a lot of ways you can think about your revenue engine and how you model it. But this is a way visually to think about the business models, especially our recurring revenue streams, right? So in the middle, you have these renewal revenues, which are beautiful, right? And you want them to be strong, good renewal rates. On the bottom, you're finding new customers, new logos to throw into that onto that platform. And once you get customers on that platform, you're trying to constantly upsell, cross-sell. So visually, you want this revenue cross to be as big as possible. Make sense? And depending on, you know, what type of company you are, your revenue cross could look differently. If you're, you know, a new startup, you don't have a lot of renewals, you got a lot of new logo. If you've been around for a while and you have a big portfolio, you're betting a lot on cross-sell, upsell. And a healthy revenue cross right now for, let's say, a mature enterprise software company looks something like this. And we have a lot of benchmark data on this on different profiles. But, you know, let's say you start out, you have customers, they're paying you $100, you know, a year, and your renewal rate's in the 90s. So you're keeping them on the platform pretty well. Not a lot of new logo going on. But you're doing a decent job at cross-sell, upsell. So at the end of the year, yeah, you lost some people, but you're still growing. You're growing 10%. That's healthy. That's pretty good, actually, in today's market. But this revenue cross is under a lot of duress. Why? Well, I already mentioned the new logo stuff. Anybody have a total greenfield opportunity out there and just customers waiting to knock on your door because you're the only game in town? Anybody? Yeah. You know, it's very, very competitive. Cross-sell, upsell is interesting. I've talked to a lot of companies about this because, again, we've built these big portfolios, but it's hard, especially with the rise of the business buyer. You're saying, gosh, it's not like I just go to the CIO and I sell them everything in my bag. It doesn't work that way anymore. I got one product over here. It's a different department over there. It's hard. It's getting harder. But then here's where the real pain is. It's the middle. What's going on there? And I can tell you, this is the hardest, most difficult renewal environment we have ever witnessed in the history of TSIA. And I started hearing about it January of this year. And so here's the first problem. You're going in for these renewal discussions and the customer, you know, your contracts probably had growth built in because they were supposed to be, you know, growing companies, more employees. And what are they doing? They're pushing seats back across the table to you. I don't need these. Right? I'm not growing that way. So this user-based growth is flattening. And if you're feeling that, you're in good company. That's what's freaking out every company who has user-based pricing, saying that model ain't going to work for me anymore. And here's the second thing that's tough. Right now, there's such scrutiny on tech spend by every CFO, CIO, because they're looking again to free up dollars for this next generation of technology. So if you're not highly adopted, right? If you can't prove the value proposition, you are on the cutting room floor. We had a conversation in the advisory board meeting yesterday, and I'd not heard this before, but they said, you know, the whole Doge thing that's going on with the federal government, several of our members said, we have, you know, customers who are in the private sector who now have Doge offices, and they're doing the same thing. They're going through every line saying, we're not using this. We're not using this. Why are we paying for this? Are you feeling that? This is a lot of pressure pushing on your business model. And it's creating this third force, which is this premium on value realization. I would submit that the number one business challenge for almost every member is you have to have a black belt in value realization. You just can't tell people, hey, our technology is great. You got to show the value, which means you have to have really well-defined value anchors. Hey, our technology helps with productivity. It helps you grow revenue. It helps you, you know, security. It's got to be very clear what the heck your solution does, because if it's not, you're in trouble. And I'll give you an example of this. We have a podcast called Tectonic, and I brought on the CEO of a company called Clue, Jason Smith, to talk about, you know, what they're doing around AI and competitive analysis. So that was, you know, what we were chatting about. It's a really good episode. But in there, he told a story, which is telling. He said, he said we had this customer, longtime customer, one of our best customers, and Jason gets word from the account rep, they're not going to renew. He's like, what? So Jason finagles a meeting with the CFO. It sits down. He's like, you know, basically, what's going on here, man? And the CFO says, hey, I'm sorry, we're going through line by line. And, you know, a majority of the salespeople are not using your solution. So it's, you know, it's gone. Jason's like, whoa, 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 whoa. Have you looked at the productivity metrics of the salespeople using and not using? Because I can show you definitively that the salespeople using our solutions have better close rates and generating more revenue. So the CFO backed out and said, all right, I have an adoption problem. Let's go work on that. telling that, because if Jason did not have those two value anchors, even though this customer is a longtime customer, gone. Cutting room floor. All of you are going to be dealing with that. Another story, we had Chad Quinn, who's the CEO of Ecosystems On, and they focus on helping companies basically have this life cycle of, number one, what are our value anchors? Number two, how are we going to track them and really measure them with a customer? And number three, communicate. So you got to do all three steps when you're playing this game. And, you know, we know, we've done research on this, we know what good value anchors look like. It's not like a mystery here. What we're not doing is those three steps. We're not defining them well. We're not measuring them. And we do a shitty job of communicating. That day is gone. Again, if you're not getting this black belt, you're on the cutting room floor. Fourth force, it's changing the way you operate. Model-driven revenue. What the heck is that? So all of you want to go through this journey with your customers. You want to start educating them, learning about your awesome solution. Eventually, they're going to buy. They're going to get on the platform. And then you're going to expand the heck out of them. That's the game we all want to play, right? I'm going to give you a side interesting note here. Kathy Mackey heads up technology research for a marketing firm called Inverta, and I had her on Tectonic, and we were talking about how B2B marketing is changing. And I really recommend that episode because she threw several interesting stats on the table. And by the way, you can go into the portal, into AI intelligence, and just ask it questions about the episode. You don't have to even listen to it. But she said one that kind of blew me away, that 80% of B2B buyers have already chosen their preferred vendor. They're pretty much sure who they're going with before they ever talk to one of your salespeople. Think about that. Think about that. We think it's our salespeople, you know, that are you know, educating the customer. That they're doing all that digitally on their own before they ever talk to you. It's a different game. So how are you going to play this game? Well, this world of model-driven revenue starts with models and data. This is where the power of AI is really going to play out for us, or one of the ways. Those models are going to inform something that we call a radar, real-time adoption detection and risk alerting. You can call it whatever you want, but just think about a radar that is telling you what the heck is going on with my customers, with my prospects. And it's interesting because this is, again, I think where the game is really changing. I want you to think about your traditional radar. How do you know what's going on with your customers? Number one answer, we sent them a survey. We got a 4 out of 5. We're rocking, right? That's not what I'm talking about here. We did a paper called The 5 Rings of Early Warning. You can go check it out. And some of this was inspired by presentation Jim from Salesforce did on the main stage about how Salesforce thinks about customer health. But this is what you got to be thinking about with your radar. In the middle is adoption. What is our telemetry? What is our framework to assess customer adoption? If you don't understand that, you're kind of screwed already. Secondly, what about the technology environment of my customer? Is it mature? Is it lagging? Is it, you know, held together with baling wire? You need to understand that. Third thing, is my customer engaged in our community? What do I mean by that? Do they come to your user conferences? Have they taken training? Are they on your portal? What's the disposition there? The renewal disposition. Do we understand and are we tracking? Do we have metrics around? Do we think they're going to renew or not? And then this last category, which is getting more and more exciting, is other. There are now AI tools that will go out and scrape everything for you. What are your customers saying on social? Right? What about the financial results about your customers? Hey, go back to competitive analysis. Hey, do you realize this customer is out there actively researching a replacement for you? These tools are getting sophisticated. And what's really cool is they now leverage structured and unstructured data. So a lot of us are still in this box where we're like, what do I know about my customer? Well, it's what's ever in my CRM system. We did an episode with Krishna from Support Logic, and there's so many cool vendors in the expo here with these emerging AI tools. You got to check them out because, again, they're unlocking capabilities we never had before. And so in this case, Support Logic, they're listening and analyzing all these support calls, and there's all kind of signal there for you. Is the customer thinking about buying? Should we be offering a new product? Are they frustrated? Are they signaling they're going to maybe not renew? There's insights in those support calls. If you're not checking those out and your competitors are with their radar, you're at a disadvantage. This radar is going to help guide your customer engagement model. And your customer engagement model is going to be one model. One model. Marketing, sales, services, one life cycle. It's not, we have marketing life cycle, and then we throw it to sales. It's not going to be the bucket brigade. Every Tectonic listener is well aware. I am a big believer that AI is a game changer for how professionals in the technology industry will do their jobs. TSI Research is not immune to that reality. I am proud to say that we have been aggressively experimenting on how AI can change the way we create research and deliver those research insights to our members. And now we are ready to release TSIA Intelligence, the first Gen AI model designed exclusively for technology services. Unlike generic Gen AI tools, TSIA Intelligence taps into our real-world, industry-validated data that is not in the public domain. We have designed this model to give you clear, actionable, and board-ready insights. Right now, in technology services, the stakes are really high. Every decision counts. Good decisions can build your career. Bad ones can end it. General LLMs are incredibly powerful, but you need specialized insights built on industry data that you can trust. That is TSI Intelligence. To check it out, visit tsi.com/intelligence. And then last but not least, you have to have really well-defined value realization plays. And so how does this whole engine work? So think about it. Your customer is going to start learning about your solution. They're going to go to your website. Maybe you have a freemium offer. They're going to try it. That telemetry is coming in. It's coming into your radar. And at some point, it's going to trigger, and you're going to say, you know what? Time to run an adoption play. We're actually going to have proactively somebody from our company come out, talk to them, you know, talk about what they've already done, talk about the next step. And ideally, they're going to say, yep, I'm ready to buy. As soon as they buy, what's the next thing you want them to do? We got to get this to adopt. The radar is telling us, are they adopting this or not? Do we have to run plays here? Let's run those plays. Okay, they adopted. They got value. We know what that value was, and we communicate it to them. And as soon as we did that, we're on to the next one. What's the next adoption play we're going to run? They got value. Great. We're going to communicate. What's the next adoption play? You get this, right? And this is a world where every morning when your sales and your service people and your CSMs and your support techs and your PS people, when they wake up in the morning, they're not going to guess, like, what should I be doing today? This engine is going to tell them what to focus on. That is not 5 years away. So think about if you're competing against a company that has this engine and you're playing the game the old way. Think about the difference there. You're coming to a gunfight with a butter knife. So these forces are real. And just like Newton has his laws, I have my laws. And my first law of business is unsustainable business models are unsustainable. Right? You can't stand on top of an unsustainable business model. And this is a time in history. I was just talking backstage with Phil, who's going to be speaking here from Salesforce. And we know each other from when he was a researcher here. And we both agreed. These are unprecedented times in tech. We talk, a lot about as a service transformation. I spend a lot of time talking to companies about changing their business model from, on-premise to recurring. It took us years to eat through that problem. And that was a force pushing on our business model, but it kind of moved the boulder slow. We now have four forces that are really grinding on this business model, this legacy business model. And you can feel it. I know you can feel it. I hear it in all the conversations. But a lot of you, even though you can feel it here, a lot of you, you're like standing on top of an ice cube and you're thinking your business model's there and you're like, it's still pretty solid. I think we're pretty good here, right? I'm telling you, it is getting hotter outside and it is about to go to 33 degrees. And when it gets just one or two clicks higher out there, the business model you're standing on, right, is going to collapse. I believe that deeply. So I'm going to give you a to-do list. You come to this conference. What did TSI say about what's going on? Well, first of all, he said it's a shit show. I learned that. Okay. But now what? So I'm going to give you a to-do list. Seven things. First of all, please, 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 for your customer's sake, simplify your offers. If you think your offers are already simple enough, they're probably not. Okay? Do yourself a favor here. Number two, you've got to go after the data problem. You've got to converge your data sources. You can't have these stovepipes that cannot stand anymore. It is just a strategic handicap at this point. You can't feed these AI models. Get these cross-functional handoffs right. Build your value anchors. Start with the product team. What, hey, we got this new cool offer. That's nice. What's the value anchor? Okay, how are we going to measure it? Okay, how are we going to communicate it? Next, the one process that I really want you to align up is the sales and services handoff. We still here, we did this piece of research around the checklist for success. It's still out there in the portal about what does services need from sales to make the customer successful. We're still dropping that water. Go work on that. I think you got to put pricing on the operating table. I would say a year, and we do studies on this, and we know what percentage of people are doing user versus usage versus value, et cetera. User has always been predominant type pricing. Just again, it's beginning of this year, I have heard almost every member I talk to is experimenting with, you know, modeling, looking at pricing. In an AI world, user-based pricing is not going to stand. Second thing I'll tell you is usage-based pricing is not a panacea. Ultimately, you again, are going to have to be anchored around something with value and outcome. But start getting that on the operating table. And last but not least, this model-driven revenue, this thought, start chipping on that. Start chipping on that. Because that's the one that makes me the most nervous for folks. Again, if you're competing against somebody that has mastered that, you are, and you don't have that capability, you're in trouble. So you can look at this punch list and you can think, I don't know. I'm not sure we really need to do that. We got a lot of other stuff going on. That's Newton's law. That is inertia. And before you, you know, put this to the side and say, we got other things to work on, I want you to think about how you answered the quiz at the beginning. And I do want you to really internalize that I'm not talking about one force. I'm talking about four massive forces all coming together at the same time. This is not going to be business as usual moving forward. And I love starting these conferences and getting everybody up all so excited and pumped and ready to go. That's not my job. My job is to really, for on your behalf, look at what is really going on out there and give it to you straight. So this is what we see. I was asked also to just comment on the fact that we have really sort of a fifth force in play with uncertainty being caused by the tariff environment. So we're on this. And what I mean by that is, you know, we are already doing research to see how companies are navigating this. We are committed to stay on this. We just completed a poll. The full results are in the portal. We're going to slice and dice it by different peer groups. We haven't done that yet. But just to give you some of the data points from that poll, already about 48% of the respondents said that they believe the tariff environment is going to have a negative impact on service revenue. Majority of companies, by the way, believe it's going to have a negative impact on product revenue. Right. So, and by the way, the genie's sort of out of the bottle. None of us in here know what tariffs are going to happen, when, to what countries. It doesn't matter. It's the uncertainty that is already having people pump the brakes. So it's already, you know, it's already happening. Second data point here, 22% of the companies in the survey have already done a hiring freeze. Have already done that. This is a really interesting one. What are you going to do if the cost of your products go up with tariffs? Huge question. So as you can see here in the data, 32% of people right now are saying, hey, I'm just going to push that along to the customer. Not my problem. Costs went up. 13% of the people have the exact opposite strategy. I can't afford to do that. I'm going to lose market share. I'm going to lose customers. My customers can't afford that. They've got tight budgets. I'm going to have to eat this. And most of the people, 55%, are still evaluating. We're going to keep a close eye on this one because everybody's going to be facing this decision. So here's a little journey map that we put together. There's a paper on this, Navigating Tariffs, out in the portal, or you can just use, again, AI intelligence and just see what we have on tariffs. But this is what I recommend how you think about this. Start with the fact that you probably should have a tariff tiger team. Who is a good cross-functional team starting to think about what our strategies are going to be based on where things go? I'd say that is still minority practice, but there's several members I've talked to here that absolutely have a tariff team, especially if you're a hardware company with, you know, manufacturing everywhere. But even for software companies, you have to be thinking about this because, you know, IT services is not going to be immune to this. It's one of the biggest exports out of the US. Other countries are going to go after that. They're going to put tariffs on that. So have a tiger team. Number two, this issue on hiring freeze, 22%. Our point of view, that's going to go up. Read the Wall Street Journal today. Most of the CEOs on earnings calls are now saying, I'm not even going to give you earning forecast because there's so much uncertainty. People are going to lock this down. So prepare for that. There is going to be immense pressure for you to optimize service cost. Why? Because product costs are going up. Got to be ready for that. That's coming your way. Also, there's going to be immense pressure for you to keep every service dollar in play. Why? Because product dollars may be slowing down. Get ready for that. Simultaneously, our point of view is if this stuff really gets ugly, you're going to have account teams coming to you in services and saying, gosh, this customer is really upside down because of these tariffs. Can we do something free here? Can we extend this, you know, support? They're going to ask for that. They're going to ask for that. The next thing is start thinking now about what new services you can offer your customers to help them through this because they're all dealing with this. 35% of your peers out there are already doing this. So if you're, you know, not doing this, we recommend you start thinking about that. And then last but not least, this issue of how we source services. Most of us have very global models, right? 24% of the companies are nervous that they're going to have to change their sourcing model. Majority of companies still say, I think I'm okay. I don't know. Again, I don't see how IT services comes out of this thing unscathed since it's our biggest export. So I think right now you should start thinking, what if I have global centers and I have a tariff now? Can I still use that? Partners, do I have to go local? That tiger team's got to start thinking about that. So again, we are on this, we're committed to continuing to understand how you are navigating this. If there are any specific questions you're trying to get answered that you're debating internally, ship that our way. We're going to do more polls on this, and we will help you navigate this. So I appreciate the time here today. I have to tell you personally, you saw the TSA AI intelligence. I am a power user of this technology. It makes me smarter than I've ever been before. And you guys, I'm telling you, you would be idiots not to get your teams plugged into this. We're putting it out there because we really believe we want to get the right insights to you at a time when, you know, it is so much turmoil going on in our business models. Have a great conference. I'm sure I'll see you guys over the next day and a half. Thank you.